Welcome everybody to this last talk of this 2010 Easter retreat. We're coming to the end of this period of retreat, and whenever we have any transitions like this, where we go from one place, another stage to another stage, it's always remember in life never to rush the transitions. Never get too far ahead of yourself. You're already at home, and you haven't sort of, you're sacrificing these last hours of a retreat. You find that much of your life you wish away as you're thinking of getting somewhere else. So often we live in the future, and that means we miss much of life. I remember learning this when I was a school teacher. One of my fellow school teachers was fed up being a school teacher in front of a class which didn't want to learn and being paid very little money. So he got another job. But he had to fulfill his contract to finish the year's teaching. I remember him coming out to me one day and he said, "It's not 6 months until I start my new job." He said, "This morning I found myself wishing away those 6 months of my life as I wanted to sort of finish off this job I never liked and go off to this new job." And he said, wishing away 6 months of a life is a huge amount of time. You don't have that many 6 months in your life. You don't have that many months at all. You don't have that many days. And so to wish away a whole day as you think about what you're going to do when you leave here later on today is just too much to wish away. Which is why that I've had my practice. It's been instilled into me by many years of meditation, by many great teachers, to say, don't even anticipate what's going to happen in the next hour. Stay in this moment, and then you'll always have fine peace, and your life will be very full and rich. If you always go planning for what you're going to do next, getting all your bags packed, all your plans made, everything just right so that this afternoon you can leave, doing things like that, you're wasting so much of your life. 9 days have gone past. It's incredibly quickly, and I did notice this morning that today, the 10th of April, is the 1 year since we opened up this place. We had our opening ceremony exactly 12 months ago today. How fast that has gone. I had my opening ceremony about 58 years ago. How fast that has gone. So I'm so much closer to my closing ceremony. But my closing ceremony and your closing ceremony will be something very different than the Beijing Olympics closing ceremony. There'll be no fireworks, just a little box and a fire, and everyone will be there. So don't rush anything here and I, because the life passes so quickly, and one of the reasons it passes quickly is we're not there when it happens. We're always somewhere in the future. So, on a day like today, the final day of a meditation retreat, make sure it doesn't end, as they say, until the fat lady sings. There are no fat nuns here today, only a fat monk, and I'm going to do no singing. But in other words, don't finish anything until it's finished. So, in other words, there's a whole day of meditation left today. You haven't left yet. Your body is here. Keep your mind here as well. And then you'll really understand while we meditate and what present moment awareness truly is. Present moment awareness is not just something you do when you close your eyes. It's something which you learn how to practice in many parts of your life. Just being here when life happens. Because you learn so much and you become far more sensitive and you get far more insight when you're here. Observing, being with life while it's happened. And at the same time, you always remember that. Go on, sneeze. Let it be. Down in front here was almost sneezing and she stopped it. So just sneeze and let it be. Because that's the other thing which you've learned here this week. I hope that instead of forcing things off into the future or clinging to stuff in the past, to let yourself be in this moment. I know that for some of you who've done other meditation retreats, this is quite radical. To do nothing, just to sit here and don't strive, and don't try and get somewhere, not even try and watch your breath. That's incredibly radical. But it's very beautiful. And it's so in tune with any of you who study the suttas. It's so in tune with teachings of the great masters. One of the amazing teachings which I got from Ajahn Chah, which I never understood at the time at all. I think this guy was absolutely crazy. The teaching made no sense at all. But many, 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 many years later, he just came back to me because I was ready to understand it. It's the same with many of the teachings which I've given you over this week. Things about jhanas and nimittas and still forest pool and will and no will and will disappearing and all that sort of stuff. Many of you, I hope, I would expect this of you because you're honest and sincere. Many of you think that's crazy teachings. Well done. Please reject what you don't understand. But the point is, that's in your head. And there come a time when the mind is free enough, clear and deep enough, to understand, that's what it means. Because the teaching I was thinking about was the teaching in the very first months I went to stay with Ajahn Chah. This was before Wat Pa Nona Chat was formed. So we all stayed with Ajahn Chah in Wat Pa Phong. And he used to say that his monastery was a mango orchard. And the mango trees had been planted by the Buddha such a long time ago. And all those mango trees are just full of ripe, sweet, delicious mangoes. He said the branches are literally dripping with sweet, juicy mangoes. All ripe. But he said, you monks are just so lucky. You don't have to climb the tree to get the mango. You don't have to throw up a stick to let the mango fall. He said, all you have to do is hold out your hand and a mango will fall into it. And that's the end of the tale. And I thought, that is so dumb. That is so crazy. Because then even if you did open up your hand, and if a mango did, by chance, happen to fall, it always falls somewhere else. It won't fall into your hand. That was just so unlikely. But obviously, questions afterwards here. Obviously, there was a meaning to that. There's a meaning you never understood until you really learn what letting go is all about. Obviously, the mango tree is the wisdom, the insights. And those mangoes are the beautiful insights of enlightenment, or even jhanas, if you like. But he said you never get those fruits, enlightenment, jhanas, by climbing up the tree. You never get it by throwing a stick there to try and get it down. You never get those mangoes through effort, through trying. All you need to do, open out your hand. And a mango will fall right into it. Just let go. Be still. Make peace, be kind, be gentle. And do absolutely nothing. And all these wonderful mangoes, these great insights, literally fall into your mind. They come to you. Weird, but that's actually how it works. When you're chasing jhanas, you never find them. Even when you search for enlightenment, he'll never come to you when you're still, peaceful, and just kind. All these things come to you. And that's the way I've taught this retreat for the last 9 days. Every now and again I tell you to do something, as somebody pointed out, do backwards breath meditation or breathe in 3 times and out once. And someone said actually they heard somebody doing that. It's really amazing. I only tell those for a joke, but sometimes people take me seriously and actually do it. But nevertheless, the main teaching, the one which stands out, I hope, for this retreat, is making peace, being kind, being gentle. So when anyone asks, well, how do we carry on at home? What should I do? Of course, you know what the answer is going to be. Make peace, be kind, be gentle. Because what you're doing is you're learning how to let go. You're learning how to make peace. And I often thought, how can you have peace in the mind when you wage a war with yourself and the world? You can never find peace through fighting. That's what many people do. They fight their mind, they fight their body, they fight life. Life shouldn't be like this, it should be some other way. People around me, they shouldn't make so much noise. They should be quieter when they turn on the kettle. The microwave should be quieter. Even the door should have some sort of gizmo on it so that no way can they make any noise at all. But you can't do that. So instead, as Ajahn Chah used to say, this is adapting one of his other great stories. He said, it's not the kettle that disturbs you. It's you who disturb the kettle. It's not the slamming of the door which spoils your meditation. You disturb the slamming of the door. And that was such a profound teaching of how to let go. This life is noisy. The body is painful. The hall is too hot or too cold. I'm sure that during this retreat it's been both. Even every now and again it's just right. But that's usually when you're not in it. So, it's never just right, if we think like that. But after a while, we just don't disturb life. This is the nature of having a body. It's the nature of having a retreat center. It's the nature of living in Australia, having weather. So when we accept that, it's called making peace with it. It's the nature of our mind. Sometimes you'll be dull, sometimes you'll be energetic. Sometimes you have incredible peace, sometimes you're going crazy. So don't disturb the craziness of your mind. It's not the craziness disturbs you. It's you who disturb the craziness. If you understand that, you know what letting go is all about. Because when you make peace like that, what does that actually mean? I said that quite carefully, to make peace. It means, where are you going to get? What are you going to get after you make peace? You have peace. It's like creating the causes for peace. Creating the causes for kindness. Creating the causes for gentleness. And you keep on doing that. And it's going to happen. It has to happen. It's just laws of nature. You can't resist it. You can't stop it. You can't make it come faster or slower. It just happens. You find you get more and more peaceful. Why? Because you've been making peace. You find you're kinder. You're not so irritated at the people around you and the sounds around you. Why? Because you'd be making kindness. And you find everything is just so gentle and smooth, like you're gliding through life, rather than always bumping into things. Why? Because you've been making gentleness in every moment of the meditation retreat. If you've done that to perfection, which of course you haven't, it means you'll be just so peaceful, have so much kindness. So much gentleness, like you float. Because this is what happens, this is what we do. We create the causes for the deep meditations. At the same time, we create the causes for insight. We find out, yeah, this is the path. This actually works. This makes me so peaceful and free and relaxed. And there has to come the insight that all this struggling, all this striving, all this running backwards and forwards, that was a suffering. You run backwards and forwards, you struggle and strive to try and end suffering. But actually the very struggling, the very striving, the very running backwards and forwards, that actually is the suffering you're trying to avoid in the first place. So after a while, you get the insight that release from suffering is the stopping of craving. The great third noble truth. Just let go, and the whole world becomes peaceful. It's not the world which is the problem. It's not the retreat set. It's not other people. It's your attitude. Always trying to change things, to control things, to make things happen. And when you let that one go, when you make peace, be calm, be gentle, the whole world just gets still, peaceful, beautiful. And the meditation becomes just the easiest thing in the world. And you don't have to meditate. What do you mean just have to let go? It's just what you just do. It's actually the other things which actually stop you meditating, doing them, having to give talks and stuff like that. But your base state, when there's nothing to do, you do nothing. you become incredibly still. And one of the reasons I do teach these retreats with gusto, gusto is like enthusiasm. One of the reasons I teach these retreats with gusto is because I just know the bliss, the peace, the beauty, the meaning, which you will feel and realize when the mind gets very still and peaceful. And I have got so much gratitude for all those teachers and the good fortune to be able to still my mind. You know, whenever you want, just sitting there, very busy, doing lots of stuff, tired, exhausted, you just stop trying. You have an incredible skill where you can just make the mind bliss out. And it's wonderful to have bliss, to have peace, real peace, deep peace. So much peace, so much bliss, you sit here, you just don't want anything. You're totally satisfied, 100% content. Now that really is bliss. Contentment is the highest happiness, where you want for nothing. You remember that story? Perhaps it's apt now because the end of the retreat. If you're not enlightened yet, this is what enlightenment is. It's a great story of the five kids playing the wishing game. Repeat these stories, but there's a point to repeating them, not just to fill in time, but to emphasize the profundity of this explanation of enlightenment. This also gives you a chance to sort of change the story, because every time I tell these stories, I always embellish it, always grows and makes something different every time. Five kids playing the wishing game. First kid. A wishing game, if you don't know the rules of the wishing game, if you had one wish, what would it be? And the kid with the best wish wins the wishing game. So the first kid said, if I had a wish, I would wish for the latest computer game. Let's change it. If I had a wish, I would wish to see the new movie Avatar in 3D. That's what the kid said. Very good. The second kid said, nah. If I had a wish, I'd wish for my own movie theatre. So I can watch Avatar many, many times. Invite all my friends. Whatever other movie comes around, I can always go and see it because I own a movie theatre. Very good. That's obviously a better wish. And the third kid said, well, if I had a wish, yeah, it's not just watching movies. Actually, I love watching movies, but my mum says either they're too advanced for me or I spend too much time watching movies, I should do my homework. So he said, if I had a wish, he said, I would have the billion-dollar wish. With $1 billion, I'd buy my own movie theatre. That's number one. And my second wish, I must buy my own school as well. Because if I own a school, I won't need to go there. I pay all the teachers, so I can tell the teachers to give me top marks, give me the highest grades. And that means I can graduate from my own school. And once I've graduated from my own school, you know, as the leaders, the ducks, then I could actually buy my own university. That's what they have in the United States, have these universities. You buy your own university and you give yourself a degree. So all the time, you wouldn't have to do any work, not go any lectures, not do any examinations. You can give himself an honorary degree if he wants, because he owns a joint. And he could spend all his time watching movies. And, of course, with $1 billion, you have enough money left. If you think of something else you want to buy, you can always buy something else. You know, you can buy like these, I've read in newspapers, these multimillionaires, they buy soccer teams. But they're dumb. Instead of just buying one soccer team, they should buy the whole Premier League. And then their soccer team will always win because, you know, they're in charge and they can sell all their good players and they can keep all the good players for themselves, for their own team. That way they'll always win. So with $1 billion, you can do whatever you want, and it's enough money to last you for your whole lifetime. So it's $1 billion wish, number three, and that was a clear winner so far. And the fourth child, this girl, she was a genius. She thought, how can I beat $1 billion wish? And for those of you who haven't heard this before, seeking $2 billion or $3 billion is not really an increase, because $1 billion is as much money as you can ever have. So $2 billion or $3 billion would be exactly the same. So the four kids said, if I had a wish, I would wish for three wishes. That's a wish. First wish, I'll have the movie theatre. Second wish, $1 billion. And the third wish, 3 more wishes. And that way I can go on forever. So that fourth girl had the infinity of wishes. Now that's pretty smart. Can that be beaten? And of course, if you read the story in the book, or if you heard it before, of course it can be beaten. You should know it can be beaten, because there's a fifth kid here. And the last kid always wins in these stories. You know that. But I like sort of making people pause if they haven't heard the story. How can you make a wish which is even better, clearly superior, than having an infinity of wishes granted? And that last kid said, if I had a wish, I wish I was so content I never needed any more wishes. He was superior than having wishes granted. He is not needing wishes anymore. And that kid won the wishing game. And that's what enlightenment is like. That's even what the stillness in jhanas are like. You're so content. You just don't need a will. What's the purpose of a will? To get you something you don't have. But when you're in deep meditation or experiencing enlightenment, you're actually so content, you don't want anything at all. Total peace of mind. Have you ever had that experience? You're sitting here, you don't want anything at all. Honestly, with 100% integrity, you're totally happy to be here. You don't want jhana, you don't want nimittas, you don't want anything. You don't want to leave, you don't want lunch. You don't want people to be quiet, you don't want them to be noisy. Just you don't want anything at all. And that state lasting 1 minute, 5 minutes, half an hour. That is bliss. Big bliss. Huge bliss. And it gives you what a taste of enlightenment is like. That deep peace, that deep contentment. Just don't want anything at all. Just so happy, so content just to be right here. And because of that is probably the best description of enlightenment you can possibly comprehend. Talking about disappearance and nothingness, yeah, that doesn't really sort of, as they say, cut the mustard. I never actually understood what cutting the mustard was all about. I don't know, mustard, how you can cut it. I thought it was a paste, but nevertheless, that's the phrase, cutting the mustard. I mean, it doesn't actually work. But that simile, that really does work. That gives you a feeling and experience of what this enlightenment is. And it's close enough to something in your real experience that you can understand it. It's beautiful feelings of contentment and stillness. One of the signs of that contentment, the mind doesn't even think. All thinking comes from a mind which is discontent. You think you need to know something more. You think you've got to work it all out. Look, you'll never be able to work it all out through thinking. Just shut up. Tell the mind to stop. And then that silence, that's where all the questions are answered. Because what happens is, you know, you notice this. The first night of a retreat, question time, is only a few questions. I remember the first night of this retreat, I had to sort of pad the questions to make them last the hour. Last night, they went on for an hour and a half, so I was told. So we've answered all these questions. What happens? We only get more. Have you ever noticed what that means? Because once you ask a question, you get two more. You answer those two questions and you get four. That questioning never has an ending if you follow that path. You just be still, content, absolutely peaceful. It's not that you're too dull to ask any questions, it's the answer's right there for you. Remember what the answer to the question why was? The biggest question in the world? There's nothing. In peace, when there's nothing, you have the answer to the question why right in front of you. You're peaceful, you're still, there's nothing there. You have the answer. The only trouble is we forget what the question was. I think that was in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, wasn't it? They finally managed to find out the answer to the universe, which was 49, but they forgot what the question was in the first place. So that's similar to what happens in meditation. You're so peaceful and calm and still, you forget what the question was. The question is, what's the meaning of life? And the answer is peace, stillness. Meaning in the sense of the goal, the purpose, the destination. The destination of your life is stillness and peace. Calm. That's why it can be a mango which has forced into your hand only when you don't climb the tree. Only when you don't try and shake the tree. So all the meditators who try to shake the tree, all they get is headaches and frustration. And for a long time now I've seen that some people meditating and they sort of give up, they meditate for years, they say, I'm getting nowhere. I can never get my mind still. I can never find any peace. And so you just got to teach, you know, right from the guts. Teach straight down the line. Every time you try something, of course you're not going to get peaceful. It's obvious when you look at it. Trying disturbs the mind. Effort agitates. So, no effort, letting go. I mean real no effort, real letting go, 100%. It means you're doing absolutely nothing. You're putting down the cup. The water has to be still. Can't do anything else. So once you learn how to do this, and you practice this, which I hope you have, at least you have some taste of stillness every now and again. One of the reasons why, that when you are peaceful, when it does work, don't just think, oh, I can do it now, I can do it now. No. Why? Why did that happen? All those peaceful meditations you've had so far in this retreat, what made it work? Why were you peaceful? You ask that question just to reinforce the message of everything I've been teaching in the last 9 days. The reason you had a good meditation was because you did let go. You didn't try to do things. You didn't expect anything. You weren't meditating to try and get somewhere. You're just sitting here and just giving up. Just making peace, being kind, being gentle, not knowing where it's going to lead you. It's one of the reasons why novice meditators, they have the beginner's luck. It's not really beginner's luck. It's just because they're a beginner. They don't know what to expect. They don't know really what they're doing. That's brilliant when you don't know what you're doing. It means you don't do anything. When you know too much what to do, there's all that much you can do. So when you don't know what to do, nothing to do, you just sit here. That's why many of those beginners, they get in these deep meditations. Wow, this is easy meditation. It works. And then they try and learn all about it afterwards, and that's when they stuff up. So just keep it simple. Make peace, be kind, be gentle. Just let go and learn what that letting go is. Feel it. When you know what it is, when you feel it, it becomes something you do sub-verbally. You just sit down. The mind knows exactly what to do. It just makes peace, be kind, be gentle. Not as words. It's just what those words are pointing to. It's that openness of the mind, which is kindness. That softness, which is gentleness. And this inclination to more and more stillness and peace, which is what we call making peace. So you don't need to say those words to yourself anymore. You just do it. Just like you tell the dog, time to go for a walk. And the dog wags its tail, gets the leash, and off it goes. It pulls you on the walk. I've often seen that. People don't take dogs for a walk. Dogs take their owners for walks. That's what it looks like. The same way you don't meditate. Your mind takes you on a peaceful journey and drags you behind sometimes. So you make peace and you feel that peace. And hopefully during this retreat you've had some moments of peace, some moments of stillness. And ask yourself why. It was because you let go. That thing which you did was called letting go. That was the second noble truth third noble truth meditation working. Letting go, and it led closer and closer to enlightenment. Every time you got frustrated and upset, you had to be doing second noble truth meditation. You wanted something, you craved for something. That's why it was suffering. The Buddha once said, and this is in Yanatiloka's translation in the word of the Buddha, he said, monks, this is a path, a practice without groaning. And I love that translation. The real practice of Buddhism is no groaning at all. No, this is tough, this is hard, but I've got to do it. Every time you have a groan, it means you've missed the path. That's why it's such a beautiful path. A path without groaning. A path of bliss upon bliss upon bliss. Of peace, going into a deeper level of peace than you've ever known before. And then to another level of peace you think cannot exist, but there it is for you. And you take this peace into such incredible deep levels. Levels of peacefulness which the ordinary human being, not just as not known, can't imagine can exist. Incredible peace. From the deepest states of peace until it gets ultimately peaceful when things cease. It becomes an incredible path. A path where you experience these things, know them for yourself, and find that all the teachings of the Buddha are not to be found in the books, but as the Buddha said, are to be found in this body and mind. That's why when I tell students, they ask me, it's a common question, you go to all these schools and give them talks on Buddhism, and they've got these set questions, you know, what the holy days of Buddhism, you know, just like our Easter, say the Christians, you know, what was the founder, you know, does Buddhism believe in God? But one of the questions that always comes up, what are the holy books of Buddhism? And I like that question because it gives a question which is serious and gives you an opportunity to give a proper answer for a change. And of course, the Buddha said, all the teachings of the Buddha lie in this fathom-long body and mind. This is your Tripitaka. This is where the Dhamma lives. Inside your mind, inside your heart, inside your body. So when I say that the meditation is the book which Buddhists read, I'm not just making that up. That's based on a very profound, quite well-known teaching of the Buddha. So understanding that, this has also been a Tripitaka study retreat. You've been studying the Dhamma, reading it in its original language, which was not Pali or Sanskrit. The original language is the language of the heart, the language of your mind, the language of peace and kindness and gentleness. That's the language of the Dhamma. And you know that because it resonates and makes sense with you. So this is what you've been reading over the last 8 or 9 days. When I say don't bring any books, or few books, that's why we say that. Instead of reading the menu and eating the menu, as I said the other night, the food is on offer. Eat the food. Throw away the menus. You spent all your life eating menus, tasteless bits of card. So eat something which is delicious. The beautiful peace and stillness inside the heart. So every time you have been peaceful and still in this retreat, understand why. It was contentment. It's happy to be here. Remember the difference between prison and being free? Happy to be here. That's contentment. That's why the enlightenment is called freedom, liberation, vimutti, deep freedom. So if you want to be free, what should you do? This is not a free society. I know, especially the United States talks about the free world. It's not free world. We're so imprisoned by our cravings and our desires, by our anger, by our ill will. We can't even liberate ourselves from our grief or from our anger from the past. We are totally imprisoned by these things. We're imprisoned by worry and concern. We're imprisoned by our attachments. Not free at all. Except if you come on a meditation retreat. You just sit down and you want nothing. You're totally content to be here. Then you feel freedom. You know it. That's what freedom is. The two types of freedom, the real freedom and the false freedom. The false freedom is called the freedom of desires. Where your desires can run riot, do whatever you like, no precepts, no rules, no laws, enough money to bribe your way out of any prison, enough power to get whatever you want. That type of freedom, you know, that people cherish. The dictators, the wealthy. It's called the freedom of desires. Just like that fourth kid in the wishing game. I have so many wishes. An infinite amount of wishes granted. That's called freedom of desire. A desire can get anything it wants, whenever it wants it. I remember some, it was a Muslim, once told me this ancient curse, this ancient Arabic curse. And I really suspect that Buddhism had some influence in the Arabian Peninsula, because I know Aden, this is historic, in the time of Ptolemy Philadelphus, 200 BC, somewhere around that, give or take 50 years, there were Indians in Aden. It was an ancient port. It was recorded in tombs of there, of these ancient Indians, with Dhammachakas on them, Buddhist symbols. So certainly, you know, there was Buddhist influence in the Arabian Peninsula, 200 years BC. I often think there must have been some Buddhist influence there, because this Arabic curse is the most brilliant curse you could ever have. I know that one Arabic curse, I know, which is just the ordinary one, what was it like, may your armpits be infested with the fleas of 1,000 camels. Remember that one? Great people. May your armpits be infested with the fleas from 1,000 camels. But that doesn't really cut the mustard again. The really one which really cut the mustard, which was the worst curse you can give anybody. May you get everything you want as soon as you want it. May you get everything you want as soon as you want it. For most people, that would cause absolute craziness. As soon as you want something, it appears for you. If you understand wanting, you understand why that is a worse curse. To me, that would be like the hell realm. To exceed all hell realms. What people think is heaven is actually the hell realm. It just makes you more wanting. Never satisfied. Because you can get whatever you want whenever you want it. No peace at all. So that's called the freedom of desire. And as a meditator, hopefully you can understand that freedom of desire is what most people just try and follow and develop in their life. And it just creates more suffering. And you wonder just why is this Western world so rich and so powerful, have so much suffering? It's obvious. Because we're following the path of increasing freedom of desire. You can just, you don't have to go anywhere now, turn on the internet. Apparently every movie you can just download from the internet off these sites. You don't even need to go to the movie theatre anymore. You can just go and watch any part of the world. Anything you want, you can get more of these days. We go more and more along the path of freedom of desire. And it just sends us more and more crazy. That's why it's a hell realm. And the opposite is the freedom from desire. The path of the Buddha. Realizing it was desire. It was not going to give you happiness. Desire was a problem itself. Wanting. It was a Zen saying. All wanting goes to a contrary end. It wants because it thinks it's going to give you happiness and satisfaction. But it only produces the opposite. So, when we go to the path of freedom from desire, we sit here, we don't want anything. Perfectly happy just to be here. You don't need to have a perfect body, a peaceful place, a full belly, or even a body which isn't sick. You don't have to have a beautiful body, a young body, even an old sickly body. You can still be totally content. Just happy to be here with my aching body. Happy to be here with my breast cancer. Happy to be here with my pain. Happy to be here with all these people criticizing me. Happy to be here. That's called contentment. That's called freedom from desire. That's what we do when we make peace, be kind, be gentle. We sit here. And all our wanting vanishes. And then we realize the destination which our wanting promised to get us to. Contentment, peace, satisfaction. I still remember one of my childhood heroes, Mick Jagger. Remember, I can't get no satisfaction. I can. I put my hand up. How can you get satisfaction? Even Mick Jagger, you know, this icon, any girl he wants, money, go anywhere he wants, buy anything he wants, do anything he wants. He can't get no satisfaction. A monk like me, yeah, I can get satisfaction. No money, old, probably fat and ugly. So I can get satisfaction, just sit here, totally satisfied. Now, you understand what we're doing this for. And hopefully how it all fits together. If the goal is being freedom from desires, not the freedom of desires, freedom from desires. How can you get to that goal by effort which is based on desire? I want, I've got to get the jhanas, I've got to get the nimittas, it's only a day to go, no more messing about me. I'm going to, even not going to have lunch today, I'm going to sit here, even though my blood turns to dust and my bones dry up, whatever it is, the other way around actually. But I'm not going to move from my chair until I get fully enlightened. And even if the retreat ends this afternoon at 3 o'clock or 3:30, whenever it's supposed to end, I'm going to sit here. I'm not going to move. I'm not going to allow anyone to sort of take me away from here. This is it. I'm going to sit in this meditation hall. The only time I'm going to go out is when I'm totally enlightened. You go out in an ambulance van going to the Greylands Hospital for the mentally disturbed. That's what will happen to you if you try that sort of stuff. Because that doesn't work. You've tried that. And it obviously doesn't work. How can you free yourself from desire by making more desire? So when you understand the goal is freedom from desire, the beautiful contentment, and you've tasted moments of contentment. Sometimes I've said at the beginning of meditation, you know, think of the time. Remember the time you've been so peaceful. The most happiest, I mean not the happiest sensually happiness, but those spiritually peaceful, happy time of your life. Where was it? What was it? What was happening? You'll always notice that was when you're totally content. Moments when you're sitting somewhere or standing somewhere and just so happy to be here, not wanting anything else in the whole world. That's true happiness. It's being here. Totally, absolutely content. And the more that's independent of things and people, the more stable that type of happiness is. When it's a happiness really dependent upon letting go, built on letting go. You're sitting here, you haven't got anything, you don't want anything. That's peace. That's bliss. That's freedom from desires. And that is what we've been doing here. You may have not got totally at the end of that path. But hopefully you've had some taste. The Buddha used to call it vimutti rasa, the taste of freedom, the sniff of enlightenment. And people get that. Look, the very first time I meditated as a student at Cambridge University, 18-year-old, just 1 minute or 2 minutes of a little bit of peace. That was enough for me to recognize that that was a taste of enlightenment. It wasn't deep at all. It wasn't limited. It was just watching your breath and getting a tiny bit peaceful. But that was enough for me to recognize that this is the biggest meaning I've had. Go to all these great lectures on the astrophysics of the galaxy, really cool stuff about the fundamental particles and the quantum foam, really interesting, weird stuff. But that one moment of peace was more important than anything else. So that just, once you get a moment of peace like that, you've got no choice. You had to incline towards more meditation, eventually to being a monk, to being a meditator. This just happens. Because that moment of peace, that taste of freedom, is something which you'll never, ever forget. This is something which promises you the very best in the whole life. It is the only purpose worth pursuing. So once you have that taste of freedom, it'll always come back again. Always come back again to develop it, investigate it, to make it fuller, broader and deeper. The only problem is, how do I get it back again? And eventually, hopefully, you have decent teachers who keep on telling you, it's a freedom from desire, mate. Freedom from desire, you know? Freedom from desire. Freedom from desire. So shut up and stop your desiring. And all these things come to you. And to finish off, one of my favorite similes. And I'm not repeating similes from other people. These are originals. Yesterday, there's a computer in my office, and I was checking on Ajahn Sujata's blog, because I went in there the other day, Ajahn Brahmadi was doing some work, and on his blog, he's got a new thread of Buddhist jokes. And I was looking at some material for last night's talks. And on there, I saw this person who was a Zen practitioner, and he said, this was his joke. And he said, there was two monks arguing about a flag waving in the wind. And one of the monks said, oh, the flag moved. The other one said, the wind moved. So they had an argument, went to the teacher, and the Zen master said, oh, you're both wrong, the mind moved. And that was the original teaching. That was what you read in the books. But as for me, I added the last line. And then they went to a forest teacher, and he said, all three of you are wrong. Your mouths moved. And that was an original Ajahn Brahm. I invented that one. And then this Zen guy put it on Ajahn Siddhartha's blog, and he said, I only heard this one 4 years ago. I wish I'd have found this out when I was a Zen monk. So he's only saying it's a joke, but it's also a very powerful, meaningful joke. So some of these things I originate. And this is one of the other ones which you originate, which was the story of the very famous one. These days, I hope you all know this, the donkey and the carrot. It's a brilliant one because it actually describes almost perfectly what happens, how people get jhanas, how people get enlightened. And it also illustrates the reason why you've had problems, if you had any problems in this retreat. How does you get a donkey to pull the cart? You can't whip the donkey. You can't beat the donkey. Because, you know, donkeys are so stubborn. Even if you hit them, they still refuse to move. It's one of the reasons why I don't use a stick myself, like a Zen Roshi would do. Even if I hit you, you still wouldn't move. And that probably would hit me back. So it's a waste of time. So you don't use a stick to make a donkey. Actually, you do use a stick, but not to hit the donkey. You tie the stick to the donkey's back. In the front of the stick, 2 foot in front of the donkey's mouth, a string on the end of the stick, and a carrot on the end of the string. If that was a donkey from, say, Kuala Lumpur, Singapore, Malaysia, you put a durian on the end of the string. So let's use the Singaporean or the Malaysian donkey. It's got this delicious durian there. You can smell it. You can smell it a mile off anyway. You can smell it there. And he wants to eat durian. And so the donkey just moves towards the durian. And of course, what happens? Because there's a stick on the back of the donkey, the stick moves, the string moves, the durian moves. So even though the donkey sees this durian, it goes towards it, the durian moves away from the donkey. He goes further towards it, the durian still moves further away. The durian is always about 2 foot in front of the donkey's mouth. Now the thing with donkeys, they're stupid. Which means that they don't see what's going on. They still hope, if they keep on moving, that one day they'll get that durian. Just like some of you keep on hoping, if I keep doing effort, one day I might get jhana. Sometimes you can see it just right in front of you, just a little bit more effort. And it keeps moving away from you. And this is our life. Until somebody teaches that stupid Singaporean, Malaysian donkey how to catch durians, until they teach them Dhamma and meditation. And once the Singaporean donkey joins a Buddhist fellowship and actually learns some meditation, it knows how to get durians. Really easy. Run like hell after it. And still, because we're doing Singapore, they run like hell after the dollar. They work so hard. So run like hell after the durians. That's important because you've done effort. And the durian is still 2 feet in front. But then, this is the important part. The donkey just knows how to make peace, be kind, be gentle, just stops. Doesn't do anything. And of course, what happens as soon as the donkey stops? The durian goes further away from the donkey. Just like when I ask you to let go, make peace, be kind, be gentle, you fall asleep. Enlightenment, nimittas, even the breath is further away from you than ever before. You just dulled out. Don't worry. Remember the fourth thing you should do? Make peace, be kind, be gentle, and be patient. Wait in the moment. Because all the donkey does, he sees the durian go further away than ever before. 4 foot away. Never been that far away before. Sometimes when you meditate, you've been on Vipassana retreats and other retreats. It's the worst retreat, you're getting nowhere. But then what happens? Of course, you know, don't go too fast. Let me enjoy the story. For many of you, the durian's already in the donkey's mouth. You run so far ahead. You're so impatient. So what happens? Of course, the durian starts coming towards the donkey. And he gets this wonderful place where the durian's in its normal position, 2 foot in front of your mouth. You're back to normal now. Yeah, you can watch the breath as you normally did. But now, that durian is, the first time this has ever happened, the durian's actually coming towards the donkey. And the donkey's not even moving. The donkey's absolutely still, doing nothing. And now the durian's coming towards her. You come closer and closer and closer, and you're doing anything. You're sitting here, you've got delightful breath, not doing anything. And this incredible nimittas coming closer and closer to you, not doing anything. Jhana, oh good, second, third, fourth, all coming towards you. You can't stop it. And what do you do? Just nothing. And then, the final moment, it's metta. The donkey says, the door of my mouth is open to you, Juri. And it just pops in. Thank you very much. And that's how donkeys catch durians. And that's how you catch nimittas, how you catch jhanas, how you become enlightened. See, it's all about just stopping, being still, not doing anything, not going anywhere. A freedom from desire. And everything you ever aspired for, everything you ever wanted, all comes when you stop the wanting. It takes a little bit of time for the durian to go into your mouth. Give it that time. That's a path towards enlightenment. Towards jhanas, towards nimittas, towards everything. So that's why I teach this way. I don't know, maybe the retreat stopped, you know, while the durian was still 2 feet in front of you. Or maybe 4 foot in front of you. Doesn't matter. Just keep on practicing. Eventually it happens. And that's again one of the most amazing things. When you think, even you think, how could ever these things happen to me? Just an ordinary guy, an ordinary girl, not particularly intelligent, not particularly skilled, an ordinary person with an ordinary life, and you sit there and do nothing, and it all happens to you. In the time of the Buddha, there were people who were street sweepers. The people who, was it Chulapandika? He couldn't remember any teachings. And all these amazing dwarfs. Again, people from all classes of life, girls and boys, all became enlightened. It's really inspiring to see that it was basically for anybody, not just for the upper classes, not just for the intelligent, not just for the men, for everyone. Women, men, prostitutes, kings, everybody. They learn how to let go. They learn how to stop. They became peaceful, and the durian came to them. They didn't climb the tree or shake it. They just put out the hand, and the mango fell right in the center. Delicious. Thank you so much. Not theory, but based on practice. And hopefully in this retreat, you just had a taste, a smidgen of that, enough to give you confidence to continue on this beautiful path of letting things be. This is the path of meditation. as it was taught to me, as I've been practicing it, it works. It's a tough one to do, because no matter how much I try and inspire you, no matter how many similes which you give, no matter how many times you say, make peace, be kind, be gentle, people still make war, they're angry, and they're rough on themselves. Which is why you have to keep on repeating it over and over and over. Only when you are peaceful, when you are kind, when you are gentle, will I stop saying those words. And when you are, you'll be smiling, peaceful and happy, fully enlightened. So the retreat never ends. Whatever is said, it's the seeds in your mind. When it comes the time for the next retreat, you won't be able to resist. You've already been brainwashed, either here, somewhere else, at home or whatever. That's why we built this retreat center. If you can't go on a 9-day retreat or a weekend retreat, you have self-retreats. Book in when there's no other retreat here. Stay there, in your rooms. Meditate. Remember the instructions. Hopefully you're so brainwashed you won't be able to get rid of them. You come here and you just see. Make peace, be kind, be gentle. Make peace, be kind, be gentle. Until that one day comes, you make peace, be kind, be gentle, full on. You press all the right buttons. You stop. And you see the mango, or the carrot, or the durian. Or if you're an English monk, you see the fish and chips in the newspaper coming right towards you. Delicious, thank you. So that's how you become enlightened. And that's what we've been doing in this retreat. So, I hope that you've been brainwashed enough. Hopefully you've had enough taste of freedom to get, this is delicious. And you will get hooked and you will take it further and be more peaceful, enlightened beings in this world. Because my goodness, we need them. So thank you for listening. It's now, what time is it? Almost exactly an hour. It's just gone 9 o'clock. Now is the time for you. Bianca said it's time to tidy up. Okay? So those of you who had few things, you're very fortunate. You can pack in 5 minutes and you can come back here and meditate afterwards. So remember, just be kind, be still, be in the moment. Don't worry about time. And what happens in the afternoon, Bianca? When do we meet again? In the afternoon? No idea. 2 o'clock. Okay, meet again here at 2 o'clock. Or before. And when you come here at 2 o'clock, we'll just do some meditation. About 5:30, we'll do a meta meditation. Some chanting at 3 o'clock to finish off. And then it's bye-bye and see you next time in Nirvana. Or somewhere along the path. Okay. Oh, I should have some any questions on what I've just been saying. Just summing up what I've been saying. Amazing. Oh, okay, Mike. Go on. Are they really donkeys? Yes. I mean, I'm looking at one donkey right now. Donkeys don't have to have big ears and long ears, you know. That's actually how it works. It's a great simile. Okay, so off you go. And we can do the 3 sadhus with gusto. Sadhu! Sadhu! Very good. Now you can go and clean up and see what happens. See you at lunchtime. See you at 2 o'clock.